A couple of days ago, the church celebrated the feast of St. Thomas Aquinas, great wise man, a great holy man, one of the greatest theologians in church history. And on his feast day, I ran across one of his famous statements. Maybe you have heard this one. He says this: three things are necessary for the salvation of man: to know what he ought to believe, to know what he ought to desire, and to know what he ought to do. Now, St. Thomas said that a long time ago, and it has appealed to people ever since. Right thinking, right choosing, right acting. Head, heart, hands. Well, this quotation came back to my mind when I read today's Gospel, Jesus' teaching of the Beatitudes. I said, oh, here it is, here it is. St. Thomas is talking about what's necessary for salvation, and here's Jesus telling us, blessed are we, happy are we, if we do these eight things, if we take on these eight attitudes. Sometimes Jesus teaches by telling the parables. Sometimes he teaches by healing the sick and driving out demons and feeding the multitudes. And sometimes, like in today's Gospel, he gives a teaching that is somehow more than just a parable or an action. It's like a summary of his whole message. It's like a depiction of his whole way of life, which is our way of life, the Beatitudes, these eight sayings, the Beatitudes. So I had that in mind. I'll use St. Thomas Aquinas. I started to do a little research, and I learned that people nowadays are not interested in what St. Thomas says. They're not interested in the three things that are necessary for the salvation of man. I was told that millennials and Gen Z are not thinking about salvation. That's not in their minds. They're thinking about career development. They're thinking about developing a sense of purpose, experiencing positive well-being, how to be happy in this world. And they don't like to be told what they ought to do, what we should do. When they hear an expression like this, what we ought to believe, what we ought to desire, what we ought to do, they say, well, ought, that's a bad word. We shouldn't have to do anything. If we have to submit to any requirement, well, then we're not free. And if we're not free, well, then we're not happy. So that's a mentality that's very common, but there's a lie behind it, of course. But the lie behind it is another ought or another should, a false one. We ought to be able to do what we want. That's what makes us happy. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. A selfish life is not a happy life. A selfish life is an empty life. People who spend all their time trying to fill themselves end up feeling empty, so unfulfilled, so unhappy. You have probably heard the story of the unhappy king. I've heard many versions of this. Here's one version of it. There's the king, okay? He's a king, he's rich, he's powerful, he's got fine clothes, he's got a big castle, a beautiful wife, a queen, he's got healthy children. But he's unhappy. Something is missing. And so he goes in search of the secret of happiness. The secret of happiness. He finds a wise man who tells him that all he has to do is find the happiest man in his kingdom and wear his shirt for one day and one night, and then he will be happy too. Find the happiest man in his kingdom. So he sends out his servants, scour the kingdom, find the happiest man in the whole kingdom, and bring me his shirt. Pay any price. Do what you have to. Get that man's shirt. And so the servants go, they search everywhere, all over the kingdom, until they find a simple man living in the country, singing while he's working in his field. His face is radiant with joy. He's a happy man. And the servants are very happy to find him. They rush back to the king, and they say, we found him. We found the happiest man in the whole kingdom. And the king says, well, where's his shirt? And the servants reply, we're sorry, Your Majesty. the man was so poor, he had no shirt at all. Now, the point of that story, of course, is that happiness is not based on what we have or don't have, whether we have a shirt or no shirt. Well, then what is it based on? What is happiness based on? That brings us back to the Beatitudes, today's Gospel, these profound opening lines of Jesus' famous Sermon on the Mount. If we want to know the secret of happiness, we don't have to search around the whole kingdom. It makes sense to turn to God, the author of happiness. And here Jesus tells us eight elements or eight attitudes or eight promises about being blessed. To be blessed, to have beatitude, means to be happy, to be profoundly happy, to be supremely happy. When we think about people who are supremely happy, we should think about the saints in heaven. We call them the blessed because they are profoundly happy. They're in a state of supreme happiness, and they will never lose it. They never have a bad day. They're never in a bad mood. They never get depressed. They never regret what happened. How did they get like that? And then we ask, well, how can we who are not in heaven yet, how can we who are still in this life, on this earth, how can we get this kind of supreme happiness? Well, this is what Jesus teaches. And it's not at all what we might think. It's certainly not what the world thinks. It's certainly not what we see advertised. We tend to think that if we have more things, if we have more money, if we have more pleasure, if we have more success or greater popularity or better health or security or more power, then we will be happy. And Jesus says, no, no, you have it backwards or upside down. You have it completely upside down. And then he tells us these Beatitudes. For now, we can only focus on one of them, so I'll just take the first one. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It was also the psalm response. We sang that. Blessed are the poor in spirit. The kingdom of heaven is theirs. Here Jesus puts together two things that we would not think go together. Poverty and heaven. Now the heaven part sounds good, of course. I mean, we want to possess the kingdom of heaven. We want to go to heaven. We want to be happy forever. We want to be with God forever. We want to experience what the saints in heaven experience. Yes. But we don't understand, or we don't automatically realize, the value of this poverty part. The way to this happiness, Jesus says, is to be poor in spirit. What is this? What is this poor in spirit? It's not exactly the same as being poor. Poverty is no guarantee of happiness. In fact, it can be the cause of much suffering, which we must work against. Financial poverty or material poverty. But what Jesus is talking about here is an interior poverty, what we could call spiritual poverty. Now, he's not saying we should have very little spirituality or very little spiritual life. That makes no sense. He's saying we have to take on an attitude of dependence on God, an inner emptiness that trusts in the fullness of God. If we're empty, how can we be filled? God. An emptiness that relies on God, not on ourselves. You see, if we know God, if we know that He loves us, if we know that He wants us to be happy, and He has the power to do it, well, then this promise and the promises in all the Beatitudes are very, very consoling. This poverty of spirit is merely an acknowledgement of the poverty of our human condition, but with the awareness of the richness of God. We would be unhappy if we were empty and there was no possibility of being filled. But if we're empty, and that is our condition, and we have the possibility of being supremely filled, then we can be happy. So this is the attitude of looking to God for our happiness, not looking to ourselves or to the world. It's a kind of self-forgetfulness that makes room for God and for what God wants. That's poverty of spirit. It's very freeing. It's very fruitful. When we can stop worrying about ourselves, let go of what we are so attached to or what we are trying to control, if we can let go of what we think we need all the time, And if we take on God's way of looking at things, well, then we're free. We're free to love. We're free to love God. We're free to love one another. You see, selfishness is actually the enemy of love, which makes it the enemy of happiness. When we can empty ourselves of our natural selfishness, when we're poor in spirit, then we can be filled with love of others. So that's Jesus' advice to us. Try this out. This is not just a practical application, but it's a general principle. Put your trust in God and look for ways to do things His way, not your own way. His will, not your will. And you'll discover that you're happier. It comes naturally. The happiness is the fruit of letting God be in charge. We're not in heaven yet, but we're on the way if we're poor in spirit. So St. Thomas, whom I mentioned at the beginning, he tells us the importance of knowing what we ought to believe, what we ought to desire, and knowing what we ought to do. Well, we discover the joy of this treasure, of this spiritual knowledge, when we are poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.